to and welcome to another exciting episode of Key Cards. You guessed it? Well, I told you already last week. I'm Annie Benzonelli, your host for tonight on this 320th edition of Key Cards. Yeah, the show is getting old and old and old and old. And, you know, we are here every Sunday night, 8 o'clock p.m. or whatever you say in English, you know, everyone says in a different way. And you can listen to us on 104.6 FM in the Auckland area, or you can stream us live on planetaudio.org.nz. So, another studio full of people, but first of all, this is a first time premiere. Paula is hosting with me.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Right? It's the first time. We were always on the sidelines together, but we never really co-hosted.
And
so, took control now.
That's our chance.
Well, you know, that's the last chance. Next week, Richard Green will be back taking ownership of the show.
Really? Do you know where he is now?
I don't know. Do
like
you know
globally?
Where he is?
No, I've got no idea.
I think he's back on
dry land.
Aotearoa.
Oh, really? Yeah, so how come he's not here?
Well, because probably needs some resting after all this traveling.
Jet setting.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
He did a long way, I think, coming back through Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
So, well, I don't know. Is it real? No, I don't think so. It's about the same distance,
isn't
it?
Whichever way you cut it.
But
it's
I think
a long way.
You can carry more luggage if you fly through Los Angeles.
Oh, is that why he came by?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, okay.
Bought so many shoes.
More kilts. Bought more kilts and more docks.
Well, he doesn't have to pack underwear. He just packs kilts. So he saves some space in the luggage.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's going to be a pleasure, but not only Paula is here. Now, I was about to call you Laura, and I don't know why.
Don't do that.
My brain, it's, you know, what can we do? Well, tomorrow is Labor Day, by the way.
Yes,
isn't
it is. Exciting.
So, are you going to be off work?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
That's I'm off
awesome.
On a Monday anyway, so.
Oh, it doesn't really matter for you.
But yeah, it's Labor Day, so.
So, tonight, we're not going to be later than usual, so 9:30 we're going to be off, but we have a studio really full of lovely
talent.
Guests and talents, isn't it? And I'll just introduce you quickly. And we have Jordan and Queenie. And as usual, I'm not really prepared, but
from Broken Quill Theatre,
prepared. But they're here for the Taming of the Shrew.
Yeah, kia ora. Thank you for having us.
No, thank you for coming. My preparation is getting worse and worse.
That's okay.
Oh well,
I'm here.
Yeah, you're here. You are going to protect me.
Yes.
Yes.
That's my job.
Awesome. Oh, so you've been paid by Richard.
Yeah.
To keep me on stick. And then we have Wade and CJ, and they are here for the 21st birthday of Improv Bandits.
Yay. Thank you. Yes, and you don't have to be prepared for us because we're not prepared.
Ah, okay.
It's all improvised. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's why I'm not prepared. And that's all. You should have told me before.
Us will help you out. It's okay.
Thank you. And last but not least, we have Katrina and Kate, double K. No, Katrina is with C or with K?
No, I'm K.
K. Because, yeah, my sheet is only, well, without. No, okay. The K just disappeared.
It's Katrina and Kate.
Katrina and Kate, double K. And they're here for the Jubilation Choir.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Fantastic. But they could come every week and make the little live soundtrack.
Yeah,
that
harmonizing.
Could be.
Bing bong.
What a good idea I just had. So let's start with the Jubilation. So, now here comes my ignorance. Jubilation, what are you jubilating about?
Well, I'll jump in. Katrina and I are both newbies, but usually jubilation is jubilating about, well, rivers and crossing and things like that.
Because trains, a lot of trains.
Lots of trains. Because we get most of our repertoire from the American traditional gospel songbook, but also a little bit of Emmylou Harris, a little bit of Sam Cooke. So it's some contemporary songs done in a wonderful gospel way. And four-part harmony, some beautiful gravel in there, like the wonderful Rick Bryant but also sterling sopranos like the wonderful Jackie Clark, and in the middle, mezzo-soprano Jennifer Ward-Leland. But there's more than 30 of us in the choir, and we love to sing.
Jennifer Ward-Leland, the actress.
Correct.
Yes. Ah, is she singing with you guys?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And we're singing
awesome.
With her.
Oh, yeah, well, both ways.
Yeah.
I like her.
She's one of the
members,
isn't she?
Yeah, I mean, there's... We were created in the year 2000, and there are still members of every section, as in bass, tenor, mezzo-soprano and sopranos, that are still there after all this time.
18 years old.
Yeah.
Coming to age.
We can vote.
Yeah.
And go to the pub, which we love to do.
Well,
very good drinkers.
It warms up the voice.
That's
right.
It's, it's like medicine for vocalists.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Jennifer, Jackie Clark, Isolde, Rick, and I think Queenie, who's sitting to my right, her mother, the beautiful Fiona Samuel, playwright and woman extraordinaire,
yes.
is also a founding member, or certainly has been in Jubilation for many years. So once you get a hold of the vibe, you don't want to let it go.
2 degrees of separation in New Zealand, isn't
yeah.
it? So the Jubilation Choir is a mixed choir, so
Correct.
4 voices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the classical 4 voices. Do you
4 parts? Well, we break into 8 sometimes.
8.
Yeah,
that's
and mixed
awesome.
Choirs and men, women, and anyone.
Anyone
who
wants to join.
Absolutely, no definitive labels required.
Fabulous.
As you love to sing.
That's great. Sounds fantastic. Later, we're going to try to play a song. We'll see if the technology is on our side. Because, yeah, sometimes, you know, technology is just...
Otherwise, you might have to improvise.
Yes. What a segue. Wow. Oh, yeah. You have to improvise like...
the improv band.
Wade and CJ, right?
We could have an improv kind of duel here.
Yeah.
But they are 21, so...
I can see better.
They're 3 years older than you, so they can drink in America as well.
So show some respect, you youngins.
Jeez. 21st anniversary or birthday of the Improv Bandits.
Correct.
So,
yeah.
Are you a founding member?
I am the founding member, yes.
So how was it? How did you come and so I want to create Improv Bandits?
Yeah, I was doing improv at university, and the only other game in town was theatre sports, and they wouldn't let me play.
Oh. So what better way to create your...
hence the term bandits. We're kind of the renegades of comedy, so we're all kind of young university students want to do our own thing and do a more narrative form of improv rather than the short games and the competitive stuff. We wanted to explore the art form more.
So in a longer, like, instead of 5 minutes, like
yeah. 60
an hour.
Yeah, we improvised. CJ and I just got back from performing in Hawaii a couple of 2 weeks ago.
About 2 weeks.
Now they are 21, they can go to Hawaii.
We just did a Bard's Tale, which is an improvised play done in the style of Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. So we just did that. So, you know, in those shows are normally 60 minutes.
There seems to be some kind of thread
here.
Yeah. Somehow,
yes.
This was fixed.
Yes.
Yeah, this is fixed. So why? Now I'm gonna miss the segue. So why is connected to Jordan and Queenie?
The Shakespeare link.
The Shakespeare.
And the Jubilation.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. Jordan is
Jackie
Clark's director of wonderful Shakespeare, and I. Acton, said Shakespeare.
Yeah, so we're quite a young company. Listen to you, 18, 21 years. We've only been going for this our second year. So I personally have been directing theatre since I was 14, so a good, 15 years.
Do the math,
Yeah.
30 years.
Well, this is not television, so you're going to tell, but I would never guess that.
But at the moment we're doing some Shakespeare. We're doing a retelling of Taming of the Shrew, and yes, young Queenie here is playing the Shrew, Katerina, and doing a fabulous job of it, I must say.
Thank you.
Yeah, she's a force to be reckoned with, that's for sure.
and well, at that age, it doesn't matter if we say the age, right? You're so young,
no.
It doesn't matter, because Queenie is only 15.
No. Little baby.
I know. But, passion doesn't have
absolutely
an age, right?
No, and Katerina, how old was she actually in the play?
I don't know. I mean, all of Shakespeare's
unaged
female characters are kind of quite young. You're either, which kind of said a lot about what he thought about women, is you're either a young girl or you are a matron. You know, there's no in between. There's no, you know, because of course you can't be doing things like going to university or, you know, having careers. You were playing
there were jump different
rope.
Times, isn't it?
Yeah.
You weren't even allowed on stage, I believe.
No.
There's only one career you're really allowed, and that's the Queen.
Yeah.
That one was kind of taken.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Or, well.
I mean, I've been trying.
Yeah.
You know,
but, great name for it.
You know, she's just not letting go.
Well, luckily, we are moving with the times, you know, this kind of thing have changed because, well, as well, we age more than we did before. Yeah. So, 15 probably at the time of Shakespeare was already adulthood.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Over the hill,
yeah, I know. I mean, I'm getting on a bit.
Yeah. Well, now 15, you're still a young kid.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yes.
Uh-huh. But how is to work on this as a 15 years old going and work on a show like Shakespeare, which is, like, you know, if I see all the kids your age,
yeah,
they are all on a PlayStation or, you know, social media. And so how do you feel like going and work on such an old piece of work and try as well maybe to talk to your friends that, oh, I'm playing Shakespeare.
Yeah.
What they're... Do you feel like they tell you something? Oh, Shakespeare? Yeah. What's that?
Well, I think companies like Broken Quill are really, really useful for young people who want to do Shakespeare or who want to learn more about Shakespeare because, you know, I obviously, as a younger person, would see, like, the big books of Shakespeare's complete works, you know, up on the, you know, bookshelf, or I would see, you know, Ian McKellen, and I would think, oh, this is something that is amazing, but not for me. And then kind of the more that my lovely brother started getting into Shakespeare and the more I kind of learnt and the more that I saw, I thought, oh my God, not only is this for me, but kind of half of the work is already done, like half of the writing is already done. Because I think it's kind of Shakespeare is such a universal thing because, you know, anything you think or anything you feel, Shakespeare probably wrote about it and you can find it, whether that's in sonnets or plays itself. But it's all about, you know, love and money and power, and those things don't age, you know. So stuff like Broken Quill that are applying those things to today are really, really helpful for getting young people into not going, oh, Shakespeare, but, oh, Shakespeare, you know.
So, like Quinny says, there is all these things that Shakespeare wrote, and they say that he wrote, like, four type of stories, and every screenplay, every book is now based on the fourth story.
Yeah.
How difficult it is to improv on something like that? Because improv is like creating something on the spot, right?
Yeah.
And probably every show is going to be different.
Every show is different, but the principles of storytelling don't really change.
Mm.
Yeah, so there's certain rules of narrative. One of the rules that we follow is the character must undergo change. So any story that we do, we have a main hero, and it's the story, it's a narrative arc over that time, whether it's a 5-minute scene or a 30-minute scene or a 1-hour scene, that character has to undergo change. If there's no change, then there's no journey. There's nothing to watch. So that's kind of one of the main things that we all follow in all our stories, whether we're doing short form improv or long form improv.
So like improv, you have a plot, and then. But, and no, no plot?
No, well, only one that we make up on the spot.
Oh.
Yeah. More often we will, like for the Shakespearean type work that we've been doing, we spend a lot of time studying Shakespearean style characters and some of the sorts of broad plots that he brought into his plays and kind of getting to know not the words, not the actual the plot that he was telling at the time or the way he told it, but, you know, what are the themes behind that and how can we bring that and those characters sort of to the fore? So, you know, we create some amazing villains on the spot. We create some amazing heroes. We create some lunatic and crazy sidekicks to the villains, one of which I got to do in Hawaii. And we put them in a situation and we just sort of see what happens and, you know, look for examples and chances to exact revenge or search for power or
I mean, we talk about the Shakespeare stuff, but one of the misconceptions around Shakespeare that people think that it's high art.
Mm.
It wasn't. It was written for the for the people. Yeah, people in the groundlings and those who were, you know, paying their pennies to get in there to watch it. So it's got the bawdy, it's got the slapstick, it's got all the jokes, all that kind of stuff, as well as the dramatic side to it as well. So it was written. For the people.
Mm.
That's definitely how we play it.
Yeah.
How many people on stage at the same time?
For the Improv Bandits, if we're doing the Shakespeare show, we have 6, but if we're doing the Improv Bandits, we've got 12 in the entire group. We've got one who lives in Vancouver and one who lives in London, one in Wellington and one in Dunedin, so we've got 8 in Auckland. So there'll be 8 plus. We've got Jonathan Pitts coming over for the Friday show, who's the founding director of the Chicago Improv Festival.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we won the World Champs. We won the World Champs here in 2002. He's coming over to perform on the Friday night with us as well. So we'll have 8 or 9 or so.
Is it not scary, though, because you go on stage and you know don't know what the other person is going to do, and you have to... Really, or that's the kick of it.
But isn't that kind of what this is as well?
Yeah,
I'm not really sure what we're going to say.
That's right.
I think with improv, you learn. You learn life skills. You learn how to collaborate. Mm. You learn how to share. You learn how to be creative. And I guess why the Improv Banners has been successful is the high trust level. If you don't feel safe, you won't take risks. And improv can become very. There's a lot of bad improv out there. And because the barrier to entry is so low, anyone can get up and get a group of friends and go, hey, let's go do some improv and just make some stuff up on the spot. What we do is we have a really high trust, and therefore we can be quite risky with it, because we know that whatever happens, we're going to support you.
Has it ever happened that, you know, somebody does something and it's so fun and you start laughing on stage?
Oh. Yes, never. Yeah. I mean, every time. Yeah. Absolutely.
You try not to, laugh.
Wade tries not to laugh.
Yeah. But I've been sneezed on in the middle of a scene.
Okay.
I had someone who went to fake spit and then forgot the fake part. spat on me by mistake and then looked of horror as the drool dripped off my face. And that kind of stuff. And yeah, sometimes things just happen that they do crack you up because you find them very funny in that moment.
Especially after when you go to the pub, it's going to be funny to talk about it.
Yeah.
And the next day, the next workshop.
Yeah. I guess there is some events that are going to keep going after 21 years. They still come back from the first year. Some now legends.
Yes, yeah, those legend moments.
Like family stories, right?
Fantastic. And Kate and Catherine, do choir improv? Do improv? Or... You know, the songs are written down, right?
Yes, it's we have music that we go off, but even in the last few weeks, we've been improvising a few different endings and a few different ways of just giving the song a little bit of an oomph at a time when we think, oh, it might be a little bit slow through there or very samey.
Mm.
And so somebody will go, oh, how about we do this? Or... why don't we try, how about the basses try this, or you guys shut up for that moment and we'll do this, and then we all come back in there and we'll sing through it, and we go, wow, that really works, that sounds really interesting, and it's different to the last time that maybe the choir performed that particular song. I've only been in the choir for a couple of years, and so I quite enjoy that. You sort of learn it, and then somebody goes, oh, how about we syncopate that, or we do this, and actually it's really cool doing stuff like that.
The collaboration is just another wonderful layer, and I mean, you guys would feel that both with acting. Quill, what is it? The
Broken Quill.
I had a visual.
Yeah.
And you were something to do
snap
with
quill.
Yeah.
Snap quill. Bird. And also like with Improv Bandits, when you jump in and try something new, you need to know that you're going to be caught. And the rehearsal room is a great place to fail loudly.
Yeah.
But for the most part, because it's just an embarrassment of riches, because we've got so many musical directors, so many incredible arrangers. Jim Hall has joined our choir recently, and he has worked behind the scenes on all the programs like X Factor and... New Zealand's Got Talent, and what was the one before that? Before X Factor,
The Voice,
or Idol.
New Zealand Idol.
Yeah, but he's also an incredible musician in his own right. And if the timing had been right, he could have been New Zealand's Rolling Stones, the lead singer thereof. So he's just this genius who occasionally would say, how about we try this? And because we're all sort of quite open palms about that no one's precious because they were the arranger of that particular song, therefore it must stay as it is. Because there's try to leave all the egos at the door, it is a wonderful way to breathe a different kind of life into a song that the choir's been singing for a couple of decades. And we really, really love and celebrate the extraordinary talent in the room. Sometimes we love and celebrate our company so much we don't get enough singing done in rehearsal.
Yeah,
and even on stage sometimes, people always talk about it looks like we're really enjoying it a lot, and there is that connection with each other on the stage, and hopefully that feeds off to the audience, because it needs to be a two-way thing. It'd be really weird if the audience wasn't there. I mean,
what's your catalogue? How many songs do you have?
Our full repertoire is, isn't it 70?
Yeah, there's a huge amount. Certainly, they'll be running through the songs for the next gig, and they'll say, "Oh, we're going to do this one," and then I'll just look at the list and go, "I have never heard of that song before. I had no idea." And then people will be going, "Oh, we haven't done that for ages." And so, yeah, it's just one of those. It is one of those weird things that you have to keep up pretty quickly with new songs being introduced, and so everybody's singing it, there's recording it, and then going home and listening. Most of the songs are really catchy, and they'll stick. I mean, the songs just fly around my head all the time in between practices. So yeah, it's just one of those things that, but in a gig we might do 20 something more. Yeah. So, which is only what a fifth, you know, quarter or fifth of and the songs that everybody knows.
Do you have the full 30 people on stage?
Most of the time, depending who can turn up.
Yeah, okay.
The least we've ever performed with, I think, was 26.
Wow.
And the most we've ever performed with, I think, is 33. So, it's quite a commitment. Not necessarily to turn up any Tuesday to the Unitarian Church on Ponsonby Road. The rehearsals are usually lots of us turn up.
Patronised.
But it's really the learning in between that is the big commitment. Mm. And sometimes our dear founders, they forget that you have to go through every single nuance. You can't rely on the sheet music because
a lot of things have been changed and improvised
in
the time. We will double the chorus there, or we know we're not singing those words. We've decided to do the first one of the verse three and all that kind of thing. So there's a lot of catching up that people, newbies like Kate, we're still vaguely newbies, aren't we? That Kate and I would have to go, I'm not quite sure. I haven't heard that before. I did learn a song probably half an hour before I sang it. They just sang it through, and you went, okay, I'll just sing it then. Okay.
We've taught people improv games on stage in front of an audience. So they're kind of like, what am I doing here? We'll explain it. It'll be fine.
Exactly. Just follow.
That's right. I'm pretty sure that's like every time I've performed.
I always find that fear is a great motivator.
Yeah.
It's incredible what resources you can pull on when you know tick-tock, half an hour before showtime.
It's like a shot of adrenaline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's listen to one of your songs. If technology will be on my side. And we have Shekels.
Yeah.
So we'll listen and we'll talk about it when we come back. Let's see. I hope so. Let's see.
I just want to praise you. You broke the chains, now I can lift my hands. And I'm going to praise you. I'm going to praise you.
In the corners of my mind, I just can't seem to find a reason to believe that I could break free. 'Cause you see, I have been down for so long, was like all hope was gone. But as I lift my hands, I understand that I should praise you through my circumstance.
There's shackles from my feet so I can dance. I just want to praise you.
Just want to praise you.
You broke the chains, now I can.
everything that could go wrong, oh, went wrong at one time. So much pressure fell on me, I thought I was gonna lose my mind. But now I know you wanna see if I will hold on through these trials. But I need you to lift this load, cause I can't take it no more.
Shackles from my feet so I can dance.
So I can dance.
I just wanna praise you.
Through the fire and the rain, bound in every kind of way, but God has broken every chain. So let me go right now, take the shackles from my feet so I can bear.
So it's very gospel-like,
yeah.
Kind of one, you know, those choir when you go to the United States and you go into this church and they sing with the soul and they welcome you in, right? Because when you hear your voices outside, I guess, if it's a free event, it's kind of a voice that kind of bring in people to join in and move and dance, right? Or your audience is like stiff and stays. I guess everybody starts moving as you go along, right?
We've performed in many different venues, from theatres to huge wide-open spaces like Silo Park, WOMAD, Trafalgar Park and Nelson to 12,000 people for their Opera in the Park gig.
Wow.
And also, apparently, before our time, I think a cheese factory in Arrowtown.
Yes.
So
that's when you know you've made it.
Sounds cheesy, but true. Yeah. Other venues, Katrina, that you've
been
in your time?
The Sawmill up at Lee.
Sawmill Cafe.
Yeah, so that's just in a pub, really, which is really nice. And people, they're clapping and they're singing with you and people move. And I've been in choirs where you do not move. You do not move because, you are standing with hands to your side or hands at the back and you do not move. I've also sung barbershop where you do move, but it's very coordinated, it's very choreographed, whereas Jubilation, we're looking at each other and we're doing whatever we want. And that's the wonderful thing about being in a choir like this, and you do feel the music a lot. And
and what I always like from a choir is, for me, it's a choir, I like a choir that sings but without the music sheets, holding the music sheet, because then the body is free. And then I think it always sounds a little bit better than people that hold the sheets and follow all the notes and all the words. You get kind of a bit stiff, but when you lose the music sheets and you start really feeling the song, that's the best time to watch a choir. To me, that's my personal taste.
I agree. I think if you sing by heart, then you sing from the heart.
Mm. Mm.
But then I've also gone and watched and have sung Handel's Messiah. I think I would need the words, words and the music.
Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah.
That's right. Hallelujah. But
Amen, amen.
Yeah, there's a lot of music. In to sing. You know, it's an hour long, and you do need the music to help you with things like that. But the we're singing songs which have a lot of meaning and power, and yeah, you.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, I sang for a long time in a Catholic choir.
Ooh.
For a long time.
Want to talk about it?
It was a beautiful experience. But we did as well, we did mostly sacred music, but we did as well non-sacred music. But we toured all around Europe, and it was amazing.
Wow.
You know, I sang at the Verona, Arena of Verona. I sang at Neuschwanstein Castle.
Verona, there's a cafe on K Road.
So it was a beautiful, and I think sacred music is underestimated. Now, take away the that it's for what was the purpose
the religion.
Of it. The religion of it. But if you take away the religion and you just take the sacred music as music, they have beautiful pieces, you know, Perosi and all this, also that are as well not that, very popular.
That's where we come from in terms of loving the music. We should say there's almost a qualifier with Jubilation is don't ask, don't tell is a wonderful way that Fiona describes our approach to the religious content in some, most of the songs that we sing. It's all about the shared experience of audience and Jubilation together in the space.
Yes.
And that in itself being uplifting and whether it's a religious experience or not is over to the individual, but certainly we love what we do. And so we've got the full gamut of belief within our ranks of the choir,
and that's fantastic. That should be music. Should be the wherever the music comes from to be all the arts is a point where people converge. Doesn't matter religion, doesn't matter or sexual orientation, doesn't matter the color of the skin. It's just joining, and that's what arts does. That's what music does. It was theater does. That was Shakespeare does. Because Shakespeare had, you know, men of color in his plays, way ahead of time, isn't it?
Crazy.
Because if we think that the first interracial kiss on TV was in 1966 or 1965, Shakespeare were way ahead of that. Even though women couldn't play it.
Pushing down boundaries, breaking those walls down.
Well, it's kind of a movement now, I think, liberating everybody has the rights to be who they want to be. Doesn't matter, you know, woman, man. And I hope we are on this. Well, sadly, politics is not really showing us that the path is going to go straight through it. It feels like we have to fight every single step. But I think we are above, artists above parties or politics, you know? And I hope that we're going to move that direction anyway, whoever is on power over there or over here. And we're lucky here, I guess. I feel like there is some good stuff happening.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
And let's hope that that is going to set an example for the rest of the world.
Oh, wouldn't that be lovely?
Well, art is it is about you know, unifying, and it's an expression of the soul, isn't it? So it reminds people, you know, life can be pretty tough and it can crush you. So it's to remind you, art is there to remind you that you have a soul and have a spirit.
And I guess laughter as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. Some would say the best medicine.
Always the best medicine.
You need medicine, of course, in which case medicine.
Bringing back to the humanity of being a human is a very connecting and immediate response to whatever art form, whether it be song, improv or theatre. But also in the framework of the performing arts, I do love that it can be so disruptive. I think for myself personally, it's the thing that first attracted me to the arts is that change usually starts in the form of a song, e.g. Sam Cooke's A Change Is Gonna Come, or comes in the form of someone standing on a soapbox with a message, even if it is in the middle of a medieval village or on a stage in CBD Auckland. people have things they want to say, things that need to be heard, and especially during these combustible times when it's very easy for people to have an opinion with anonymity on social media, but when you are part of the performing arts, then you have a relationship in a space, be it a field or a theatre, where you can get that connection, and it's genuine and it's authentic and it's real. So that's
an
aspect of...
I really think arts is, you know, should be very supported more from politicians, because when you go to a concert and you have all these people reuniting together, they don't care about who is next to you or in front of you or behind you.
And
or
it's the tone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or they smell a bit weird.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, that's part of it. Just move. I usually tend, okay, I'm going to move a little bit on the side. Or if you go to a museum, or if you go to everything that's artistic, I never saw anything bad happen there. Maybe it's just me, lucky me, or...
The thing about arts is that they're dangerous to politicians.
I guess so.
I mean, if people whose life and livelihood is dependent on status quo, you know, and in a sense, art, you know, in our souls and in our connections, you know, part of what we're doing is we're shaking it up a little bit, and that's a little dangerous. But it's still a wonderful thing and so necessary for a great democracy, and that's my political rant.
Yeah.
I think it gets downplayed a lot. Like, my 9 to 5 is, I'm a drama teacher, and the amount of times I hear, oh, you know, it's a hobby. Like, why are you going to kind of carry this on? Why don't you take real subjects? You know, I have, you know, parents and other teachers, and I even when I was a kid, when I was Queenie's age, and I was, you know, wagging school to go down to local theatre and paint sets and do that kind of thing, it was, you know, everyone would try and push you towards, you know, a real job. But like what you said, you create something and it makes a change, and it has always, and it will always do that. So, yeah, I think it is really important what we're doing, even if it just feels like we're, you know, being silly on stage or just singing with our mates or whatever. But
hell to the no, it's vital.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think also it's a place where the truth can be told. I was always very upset when I started watching Jon Stewart on The Daily Show, and people were saying, oh, it's just a comedy show. But he was a truth teller, and I think there has to be a place in society for telling the truth and telling things as it is, and that's what artists and people in the creative industry can do. Which is probably, you can't do so much in the political field, but I think creative people can tell the truth and what's really happening.
Especially with comedy, because you can stab someone but with a rubber sword.
Yeah.
That's right. Calling back to Shakespeare even. Yeah. I mean, in Shakespearean times, the only person who could tell the truth to the king was the fool, was the comedian,
right?
That's right.
And that was their job.
And we're coming back to that, because now who's telling the news? The real news, right? If you look at them, at the TV, how it works, it's, you know, it's
Stephen Colbert, Trevor Noah, Seth Meyers. Yeah. It's all the late night.
John Oliver.
Just American examples. Yeah. You know, we've got The Project. We're bringing our comedians front and centre of the news. Now, there's lots of debate around that, but I guarantee there's a whole lot of people who are tuned into issues because of beautiful Kanoa and Jeremy Corbett.
Yeah.
Who else is on that show?
Mulligan.
Jesse Mulligan.
Former Improv Bandit.
Yeah. I like it. Unfortunately, Kanoa didn't used to sing in Jubilation, but
she still can.
Yeah,
that's an invitation.
But Jackie Clark's been on the project, right?
Yes, there we are. They have had Jackie a number of times, but I think there's a whole lot of, in particular, a younger generation who are engaged with the news because it's not how it used to be when we were younger.
We grew up watching satirical...
We had Macfarlane and Gadsby.
Things
exactly.
Like that.
Yeah. We don't have those now.
You guys don't know what that is.
That's how you learn about the news in a satirical way, and you think about things in a different way, and so
Spitting Images was the puppet one as well.
I think it's amazing, all of those things are different ways of looking at reality, and it's either you cry or you laugh, and most of the time for a lot of people I think it's better to laugh and then to try and find a way to deal with reality. And reality at the moment, especially with what's going on overseas, is frightening. So,
I think it's a better way to cope.
Yeah.
And still get the news, you know. And because every time you watch the news themselves, and you know the person in with a tie and serious and the, I don't want to spend an hour watching that. But you know, you go and watch John Oliver and you have a laugh because of the way he presents it. Or
it becomes more palatable.
Becomes more, you know, you kind of swallow it better because it's, you have a laugh in between the serious things.
Place for, I think, every genre of news, and it's wonderful to see the same messages reiterated. All those different voice boxes and in all those different formats. It's and good for the soul to hear it many times.
The different sides. Let's talk about movies. Who goes to the movies?
I do.
Who loves to go to the movies? Well, I play something that we don't play them as much anymore, but this was our sting for movie reviews.
Flicks and features.
Flicks and feature is like them. You didn't know this.
No.
That's a secret. I will show you how it works. It's a secret button on the keyboard.
Oh, Richard didn't show me a secret button.
Richard. Well, he doesn't play them anymore. I like to play them from time to time because Paul Freewin did a really amazing job doing all these little jingles and stings, and they kind of got forgotten in the over the past. How long is Kickers? Well, 6 years, I think. Five, six years, isn't it?
Maybe even more. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I went to the movies.
Okay, what did you go and see?
Oh, I went to watch First Man. So this is the newest movie of Damien Chazelle, the director of La La Land.
Oh.
I like La La Land.
I loved La La Land.
Uh-oh.
But before...
I'm in the wrong crowd.
You didn't like it?
Never saw it.
It seems like such your thing, Wade.
It's funny because you like... I never found somebody who told me, oh, yeah, it's okay. It's either you like or you don't like it.
Yeah. I really like the bit where they nearly won the Oscar and
you
got taken away. That was a great bit.
That was La La Land.
That was La La Land. Yeah, there was... but before that, he did as well Whiplash. Who watched Whiplash?
Me.
Yeah, I did see Whiplash. Yeah.
That was a masterpiece. And now he comes back with First Man. And I think now you can see that, you know, the pressure of the studios, the executive producer, Steven Spielberg. It is the story of Neil Armstrong. Everybody knows the story. So if you want to go to watch the movie for the excitement, oh my gosh, what's going to happen?
You know what's going to happen.
So what's the spin then? The spin is more the human side of the story. That's where they wanted to go. More of his human side. Even though I felt like it was very disjointed.
Okay.
Choppy from time to time. Even though the movie, it's really well done. The visual effects are stunning because they look so real that you can tell it's a real effect. But that's what we have achieved in the last 20 years, is making these visual effects stunning. I have nothing to say about the acting. You know, the acting is fine. There is two moments that I really enjoyed in the movie. The first moment is when they do the test launch, and they go. They have to kind of trial the two parts of the spaceship to go together to then be able to fly to the moon. And that's the first launch that you can see, and it's all done inside the cabin instead of seeing from outside all the smoke and stuff. And it's all the tension, and that worked. I can feel the tension. I could feel the. That's really well done. And the second moment of the movie that was really, really nice is when Claire Foy playing the wife of Neil Armstrong, give him a speech because. The thing, we didn't know if it would come back or not. It's the first man going to the moon, and then who's going to tell this to the kids? And she tell him, and it's a really powerful moment. in all the movies, I think 2 hours 20 minutes long.
Oh, that's long.
It felt a time I was like, ugh, how long is gonna go? Oh. It took really, really long to get over there, and then finally he is over on the moon, and everything ends really quickly.
I haven't seen it. Is it based on a true story?
It looks like
filmed in the same studio as the original.
they have the studio has gone through serious improvements.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, would you recommend it or not?
Not really. I'd rather you can watch it
on
when
TV.
It comes on TV. I don't think the visual effects motivate. I think okay, let's go and watch it at the movie theater. There is a version in IMAX apparently. I'm not a fan of IMAX, but maybe that's worth it to go and see it. But there is not enough part on the moon or in space that is really worth it for it. Mm. It's very reduced. It's more the human side of the story. But you know, as I say, go and check it out by yourself. Mm. It's always nice to go to the movies. You know, it's always good to go to the movies and support the movie industry, because with all this pirating and stuff, they, you know, it's always fair to go and pay a ticket and watch it.
And it is Ryan Gosling, isn't it?
It's Ryan Gosling, which, you know, had some issues. A Canadian playing, you know, an American, a US hero. And I'm like, whatever. But I have to say,
another Canadian stealing a US actor's job.
Last week we had a quick chat about it, and one of our guests, if I remember well, Daniel, he say, you see the flag, American flag getting put on the moon. No, you don't really see it. You see it in the background, but you don't see the action of putting the flag down. And that's why a lot of Trumpists were like, you tell the story of America, but you don't show. I don't think it is the major part of the story.
I think there's some other things to worry about in the planet.
Yes, okay. Yes.
How they portrayed the flag at a particular point.
But also, I'm pretty sure I heard Ryan Gosling especially, they were talking about the fact that they wanting... This was a triumph for humanity. It wasn't just a triumph for America, which is what they've done all in the past. Obviously, you go around, you stick a flag in, which is what the British and all these other countries have done in the past, and you stick a flag in, and it's mine. But
yes.
They were just the first humans to get to the moon. So, yeah, it's a human
one
story
small,
rather than...
Small, was it one small step for man, one giant step for man. America?
Oh, man. No, it wasn't.
It wasn't America.
No, they didn't say USA at all.
I think you're right. It's a good point. And maybe that's a plus point to give to the director. That was a step for... They should have put a flag with the planet Earth on it, maybe, you know? Or, but I think, I don't know, it's been a long 50 years since that. Yeah, 69, next year is going to be the 50th anniversary. And, you know, we don't really have many people going to the moon anymore.
Not yet.
It's not that appealing.
Elon Musk is working on it.
But then they're working on Mars, right? That's the next step. It's putting a man on Mars and putting over there a flag.
Coming up at the end of this year, a little bit of trivia here, because my partner loves all this kind of stuff. At the end of this year, in December 68, was the first photo of the planet taken from the moon.
Oh.
So right. They were flying around the moon, hadn't landed, but somebody said, well, we're here, you take some photos. Mm. And it was the first time anybody on the planet had seen the planet from the moon. And there's a really famous shot of the moon's surface, and then you look over and you see the blue planet.
Yeah.
And it was the first time we became the blue dot then. And so it was a huge thing for all of us. It wasn't just America. It just put us into the insignificant we really are. Yeah.
Wasn't it Buzz Aldrin's quote about something like, he said he wanted just to grab the politicians and bring them up and point to the blue dot and shake him and go, you son of a bitch, look at that, take care of it, kind of thing.
That's right, yeah.
But that's not real because the Earth is flat.
Yes. The Earth is flat and Australia doesn't exist.
So if Australia doesn't exist, New Zealand doesn't exist. No, right.
We're just really good actors.
Whenever I think of going to the moon, there was a song my dad used to play, and it was kind of like beautiful piano music. I cut in with recordings of an astronaut. I don't remember which one. And they recorded him when he saw the Earth for the first time from space. And I remember that song so vividly because it's, you know, he's kind of, you know, at first it's kind of like, I'm coming out of the pit, you know, the doors are opening. And then you just hear this beautiful. And it's like the most amazing. And you can feel like every emotion that he must have been feeling when he steps out and he sees the Earth for the first time from somewhere else. It's
from up above.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's a beautiful planet. Too bad that we're destroying it.
We're trying to save it. There's progress being made.
Yes.
It's up to your generation, I think.
It's not ours, you guys too. Come on.
It's up to, I think it's up to other planets. It's up to every generation to save the planet.
Absolutely.
I think at least, again, in New Zealand, we little steps, like, you know, everybody, oh, they're abolishing plastic bags. I'm like, well, what problem with abolishing plastic bags? Actually, there is technology that you can build plastic bags out of corn, and then when the black flies away, in a couple of days becomes food for and the technology exists for 40 years, and why is not that implemented? And the
good
same
question.
Well, right?
Well,
as the same, the Renault created a car that used, I think, 1.5 liter of petrol every 100 kilometers, which is, you know, a powerful car. And they created a car in the early 1970s, and the car is in a museum. Why is the car in a museum and not being mass produced? Because at that point, if my car uses 1.5 liter every 100 kilometer, I don't mind paying the petrol $5 a liter. It doesn't matter. But you still have cars that, oh, it's economical, but it still uses, you know, 4-5 liter per 100 kilometers. And so I think let's go out as people working in the arts and try to brainwash people.
Well, you can make choices on a daily basis.
Yes,
I mean,
of course.
Countdown doesn't use plastic bags anymore. Most places I go to buy fruit, I have an option of a plastic bag or a paper bag.
Mm.
And I notice more and more people are using paper bags. Farrow's has the corn starch bags. They have plastic bags. And if you go to a place called Refillery on Williamson Ave in Ponsonby, which I
love
did
that
today,
place. Yeah.
So I changed my consumer habits today, and I'm never going back to how I used to purchase products. I can buy all my grains, all my seeds, all my fruits, all my cleaning products, all my shampoos and conditioners and so forth. I can take my jars, all my bags to this shop and fill up all my recycled jars and take them home. And it's a wonderful, cheap way to get rid of all those single-use plastic bags and all the packaging. You can actually get rid of all that all the packaging. And as you'll know from La La Land, if everyone had a Toyota Prius, remember that scene in La La Land? The world would be a better place. So every day people can make decisions as a consumer to make the planet more green and less blue next time we go up to the moon and look down at it.
Yeah.
It is possible. You've just, in fast fashion, drives me nuts. Drives me absolutely nuts. I've got a daughter the same age as Queenie. She loved your performance in The Wiz, by the way, Queenie.
Oh my god, take me back. Lord, that was amazing. I know every single performance I've done since The Wiz, like, no matter
Fonts me intermediate.
How, yeah, no matter how bad I played the bad witch, no matter, like, how, you know, about have been struggling, I just think at least I don't have to paint myself green, because that was like every day coming home and just like scrubbing off these layers of like hard drying paint, which is not good for the skin, you know. It was just
it was legendary though. I mean,
oh my god,
being the
can I just ask Queenie and Jordan about, because you've said that you're doing a reworking of Taming the Shrew. And I just wondered if you could say a little bit more about that. In what way?
So I do try to get young people involved as much as possible, so I do modernize the script, rewrite it. I try to keep the more famous lines in and my favourite parts in, and then reiterate some things in more modern English to kind of make it a bit more easy to follow. And Tame the Shrew, I must admit, was quite a challenging one to rework, because the more I kind of played around with the script, the more angry I got at the storyline and the characters. I'm like, oh, that's right, this play is actually really terrible to women. And so that's, and then even after I'd rewritten the script, I could have spent years and years doing it. We were rehearsing it, I'm still feeling uncomfortable about parts. So we're trying to take it really tongue-in-cheek, making it a bit silly. Yeah. We've set it in the 90s, so we've got our two sisters, Katarina and Bianca. Bianca listens to the Spice Girls, where Katarina's headbanging to Nirvana. And we've got a live five-piece band as well. So we're just trying to make it really loud and colourful and fun.
Yeah.
But it's funny because I saw now Queenie when you were talking about the 90s and Queenie were getting excited, but you were born after the 90s. You are a 21st century kid, right?
I am Generation Z all the way. But I just think, I mean, especially like, you know, bands like the Spice Girls are truly appropriate in every place at every time, you know, and it's not just it's not just the Spice Girls. Like, if you deconstruct it and you look at, you know, self-expression and pop culture at the time and how that grows and how that changes and how that creates, you know, elements of the 90s are still very much, you know, here today, and we still see a lot of those, you know, things. I mean, you know, the moon. I wasn't there for the moon landing, but I know about it.
Strictly speaking, elements of the 90s.
And I had a brother who grew up in the 90s and, you know, loved Spice Girls and loved all that stuff.
Joe Murdoch.
Yeah, he was definitely, you know, that kind of person.
Also, if you walk into...
so we can hear in the background a little bit of the Spice Girls.
Yes!
So, because Queenie likes them so much.
I believe that's Wannabe.
That's Wannabe,
It's one of our opening numbers, just...
Yeah. Oh, is it? Yeah, I think I just heard the beginning of it. I'm like, I know that song.
Yeah.
I remember that from my nightmares.
So let's go quickly in our music break, and then we'll come back, and then we'll talk all about your shows, which is what everybody's going to love to know, where to go and what to do.
Make it last forever. Friendship never ends. If you wanna be my lover, be my lover.
So there is a really heated discussion here about me playing the Spice Girls, and let's bring it on here because we have Queenie defending it. So what are going to do people at home when they listen to this song? What were they doing? They were jamming.
I mean, I think it's like, I you know, I'm biased and I enjoy the Spice Girls, but for me, the kind of, I think you are absolutely entitled to the opinion that you don't enjoy the Spice Girls. Mm-hmm. That's completely fine. I accept that. However, like, you know, if that comes on and I am in a public area, I will not restrain myself. You know, I'll be like, yes, it's the Spice Girls. And you can give me weird looks and that's fine because I have made my choice.
Did anyone else feel like Queenie just told us we were entitled to be wrong?
No.
Are you playing Bianca or...?
No, I'm playing Kate and I'm, you know...
You should have been asking for, like, Come As You Are or something like
that. Oh, I mean, yeah. You know, I love that stuff too. And, you know, I grew up with a dad who listened to, like, Judas Priest and, like, you know, that
I
kind
like
of...
Your dad.
Yeah, and so I listened to that stuff as well and, you know, things like Motorhead, you know, I had in the car as I was being driven to school. And so it's kind of, you know...
You're just beautifully, you know, musically rounded.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think I'm as hardcore when it comes to the music as Kate is. You know, when we were shooting a promotional video and, you know, Jordan just asked me, she's like, we can just put on some songs and you can headbang. And they put on Teenagers by Green Day, which is a very, like, headbangy song. And I headbanged for maybe 3 minutes and then I sprained my neck. I was in physical therapy for 2 months.
Sorry, right, I've done that.
Yeah, so I think my, you know, I was trying to enjoy it, but I think my actual, like, physical form was like, you know what, you can try and be hardcore, but... We're going to stop you. Going to rein you in, you know.
Happens to the best of us.
Yeah. I think music is something like, you know, you can enjoy, you cannot enjoy, but, you know, I like everything, which not I don't judge anyone, because if it makes you feel happy when you listen to it, then go for it. Mm. It's, you know, you have a moment to escape to some music, then go for it. And, you know, I don't mind sometimes. Listen to the Spice Girls because it's just light music, and in the car especially, you drive and sing it out loud. Well, sorry, Wade, I won't give you a lift.
That's right, I'm so going to the I Love the 90s that comes over here in February. So.
What's your favourite music, Wade?
I like all sorts.
I can
Spice Girls. No, but I like pops. I can listen to, you know.
You like pop.
Aqua. I can listen to Aqua back in the another 90s. All of that. Yeah, they're coming over in February, I believe. Yeah, I took note of that.
Tickets.
There you go. What I'm known for, I guess, in certain circles is my knowledge of 80s music.
80s?
Yes.
Oh, that's a good
80s electronica. I'm like, you know, beat the buzzer, kind of face the music champion when it comes to 80s music. So
He's been challenged a couple times. On that sort of knowledge by me. But I don't think I've probably beat him yet. Just challenged.
Yeah. But, you know, there is still time.
Oh, yeah.
The 80s were good times.
They were good times, yeah.
A lot of good music there.
Says Queenie. Yeah.
I mean, there's not many decades where you have, like, you know, you got Falco, you know, different languages as number one songs in New Zealand, you know.
Yes. A lot of German.
Balloons, yep. Yeah. Like Robbie Amadeus.
Duran Duran.
You know, her French and all that kind of stuff. You had lots of... That happening as well.
But
ELO.
Are Queen's 80s considered 80s?
Queen's 70s and 80s.
Who is excited about Bohemian Rhapsody?
Me.
Very much so.
Yes.
That looks good. The trailer looks really good.
I'm also really
excited about Rocketman.
Rocketman with
Taron
Egerton.
Yeah.
That looks good too, which is Rocketman.
I just want to see them both, like, on
the same
consecutive
time.
Days,
yeah,
each other because I think
Rocketman is 2019 though, and it's not for this year. It's next season, movie season. Mm. There is a couple of good movie coming out in the next couple of months.
What should we be watching out for?
Can I talk about a New Zealand art house film?
Yeah, sure, go for it.
Yay, it's called Vermilion. And it is.
Yes, Jennifer Woodleyland.
Yeah, so she plays the part of a woman called Darcy, and it really is her story. And it's about synesthesia, which is. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Exactly, the mix of senses. So when she plays music or hears music, colours change for her. And it's an extraordinary story. It's an hour and a half long, so really only half the length of The Man Going to the Moon. But it's beautiful pictures, beautifully shot by a woman called Dorta. I think she's German. Lots of shots in Grey Lynn and in St. Mary's Bay. And actually, Jubilation, segue, has a little cameo at the end.
Ooh.
So there's a little scene in a church. It's a happy scene. And
along with some other choirs that were gals and other choirs as well.
Gals, we know gals. Lovely, they were guests on Keycard's couple of times.
What's it called?
Vermilion.
Vermilion. So it's like Vermilion. Million, take out an extra L, Vermilion.
Vermilion.
Yeah, so the
premiere, is it on now?
It starts in Rialto Cinemas in November, early November, but the premiere was at Kew Theatre on Thursday night, and it was fantastic. Really wonderful.
Is Vermilion a kind of green?
It's a shade of
red. I thought it was red. The red.
Yeah. Okay.
If somebody wants to come and talk about the movie officially, just get in touch with Richard or Marianne at keycards1@gmail.com. We would love to talk about, as well, movies done in New Zealand. We always talk not enough about movie, and as well, there is great TV productions as well that or small TV production that goes on TVNZ on demand or this broadcaster. If you want to come and talk about your adventure in producing this amazing show, and most of the time for really low budgets, come on Keycards. We welcome everybody here, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Paula.
I always feel welcome.
Yes, me too.
So I went to see a movie recently.
Ooh. Which one?
It was Christopher Robin.
Ah.
Yeah, it wasn't very good, actually.
No. I could tell already from the trailer.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah. Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
Yeah, my daughter liked it, but I
fell
asleep.
Maybe it's an age thing, maybe?
I think it is an age. Well, she's 16.
Ah.
Well, yeah.
My kids saw it today, and they enjoyed it, but they're 11 and 8. So.
Yeah, yeah. No, I could see that other people were into it, but it was a little bit snore-worthy. Yeah, no. Like it.
Sometimes movies are a great place to have a good sleep.
Oh, I've slept in lots of Pixar movies. Yeah.
But would you go and pay $18.50 to have a good sleep?
Well, it is.
It's an expensive sleep. If you get good seats, though, it can be a nice experience.
But there is some movies around Auckland that are cheap, so especially for big families, because if you go, four people go to the movies and you go to a normal event movie theater, then you pay $18.50 per person, it kind of gets really expensive.
It's but Hollywood cinemas are a good place to go, isn't it? In Avondale.
And
we
there
saw
is
two movies for $10.
Reading Cinema, New Lean is $10.50, and West City out there is $9.50. So there is a couple of movie theaters that are cheaper.
Yes.
Because people don't go as much anymore.
No.
Because with them now digital, now you can, Christopher Robin, you can watch the movie already on digital.
Right.
You can rent it out. And so that's kind of changing the how people consume movies. Mm. I think movies is nice to watch them still on the big screen.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I don't bother unless it's Gold Class. Mostly because I like to have all that space for any other reason.
Yeah, you can go. There is the Gold Class at the Readings. It's only $15.
Oh, there we go. Very wonderfully priced.
Yeah, and it's only 30 people in there. Wow. That's where I went to watch First Man. So I had this big chair of myself, and I laid down. I felt like being on the on the rocket as well. You know, you lay down flat.
No, that sounds nice.
Was it a light-hearted movie, or was it all?
I don't know. It's just flat.
Was it
a bit flat.
It's missed
drama
something.
But it's more. Yeah, it's more the human component of the whole thing.
Like gravitas. Yeah. Like gravity. Like gravitas.
But Steven Spielberg, right?
Steven Spielberg, it's not his
first space movie.
No, but he produced it.
Right.
Director was the Michel Ndiaye. But let's go now and talk about your shows that I'm sure you have upcoming things coming up soon. Yes. That's why you came over to talk with us. And let's start with Queenie and Jordan. So start by talking about what's going on and what is on and all the stuff you want to talk about your show.
Cool. Well, we've just had our final rehearsal in our rehearsal space today, day off tomorrow, and then Tuesday is pack-in for us at TAPAC. So, yeah, we open on Thursday. So, wow. In a couple of days.
How long is the season?
Oh, very short. We're just doing a Thursday night, a Friday night, and then two shows on the Saturday. Probably 70% of our cast are high school students. Mm. So I'm very aware that their exams are like the following week.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah. So we're kind of like busting out this season, and then they'll be off getting ready for exams, won't you, Queenie? Like a good girl.
Absolutely, yes. Unlike Jordan, I do not wake school. I work very hard to achieve the marks I do get. But it's great for me because TAPAC is right next to the high school that I attend, so it feels like home. And I'm really excited because I'm really familiar with the space, and it's such a cool, funky area to kind of, you know, get involved in. I don't feel like in the Jubilation Girls, they know this as well, there's not as much of a divide in TAPAC. You know, there's kind of, because you are all kind of on one level, there's no dip in an audience. You're very kind of on the same level as everyone. And then kind of, I guess I could talk about kind of what the play is a little bit,
yeah,
without
go
giving
on
too much away. Mm. So as we kind of already talked about, I play Kate, who is, she's been named a shrew because she's very strong-headed and she doesn't want to get married. But that's a bit of a problem because her younger sister, Bianca, is very boy crazy and does want to get married. And their mother, Baptista, has to reject all these suitors for Bianca, and it's getting a bit much. And so two of Bianca's suitors devise a plan that they're going to get someone in to kind of, you know, marry Kate and kind of get her out of the way so that they can you know, kind of swoop in and fight over Bianca. And they call upon Petruchio, who is, like, if you think Kate's bad, he is so much worse. he's very, like, she's very much met her match with this guy. And so it's kind of about their courtship and Bianca's courtship. Monica plays Bianca. And kind of about how that's going, and two girls kind of in a similar situation dealing with it very differently. So I think kind of with Kate, she knows that she can't really marry for love, so she's kind of going, you know, if I'm just really nasty, then no one will marry me, so I can kind of, you know, just live my life. But Bianca kind of goes, well, she kind of can't really marry for love unless she flirts with kind of absolutely everyone and gets the most amount of suitors, and then she kind of has, like, she can pick from a wider range. So it's very interesting to see how they've gone about what they're doing.
Hang on. This just sounds like a ripoff of that Heath Ledger movie, 10 Things
I
Hate About You.
I wish Heath Ledger would sing to me, but I think he's a bit busy.
You guys are just ripping that movie off,
I know,
surely.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we've even got a few songs from that movie as well, so we're just, you know, we're paying homage, not ripping off. Thank you very much.
But it's really cool, and there is still some Shakespeare. If you're a bit of a purist, there is some Shakespeare, which is nice. I do enjoy having it.
Is the language Shakespearean way, or you have modernized the language? Or?
It's probably maybe 60% modernized, 40% Shakespeare. Mm. Kate still definitely has her big long monologue at the end, talking about how women should be very obedient, and if you've got opinions, then it makes you ugly and things like that. And Petruchio speaks mainly in Shakespearean language because he's quite waffly and just, you know, a bit of a dick. So he talks like that. But mostly it's modernised. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And there's the famous lines still in there, like one Kate has is, my tongue will tell the anger of my heart, or else my heart concealing it will break. So there's, you know, lines like that are still very much in there.
Alive.
Yeah, absolutely. They stand out, yeah.
And when you finish watching watching Shakespeare from Queen and Jordan, then you can go and watch some more Shakespeare.
No, we're not doing Shakespeare, doing the Improv Bandits 21st birthday, so it won't be the Shakespeare show at Bardstown.
Ah.
Yeah, but we're on a tap back as well, 2nd and 3rd of November, doing Improv Bandits. And then a couple of weeks after that, we've got the wider group, which is the Covert Theatre. Mm-hmm. They're doing their shows on the, 2 weeks from then.
16th and 17th?
Something like that.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
My birthday.
Yeah.
Which one, 16th or 17th?
17th.
Treat yourself. Come to a show.
Yeah, so we're doing, yep, so it's just for us, this is a celebration. 21 years is a long time to be doing that. TJ's our latest member. So you've got the oldest and latest member here and everyone else in between. Yeah.
Oldest?
As in most.
As in the founding member. Yeah.
We're actually roughly the same age, so that's.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Yeah, I know.
How did you get to join?
So I was working. I love to sing, actually.
Excellent.
And I had tried for a couple of choirs, and they found them highly, like, very large commitments that I couldn't really,
commit
to. And you're letting a lot of people down if you don't commit. Mm. So I chose not to continue with the choirs. It was a beautiful choir that sang at, I think, at Barradine College that I was kind of in. Anyway, for a little while. And I was looking around for something else creative to do, and I worked with a lady called Lorraine who had just done a season of an improvised musical season.
Our instant Broadway show.
Instant Broadway show.
Improvised musical.
And so I was like, imagine being able to improvise and sing at the same time. Wouldn't that be cool? I'd never have to learn a thing. Great. So she got me onto Wade's training program for the Covert Theatre, and there's a very structured way that you become someone...
a bandit.
Yeah, well, not even a bandit, just to join the Covert Theatre.
Okay.
And I did a 2 10-week courses and went through that and learned how to improvise and smelled fear sweat before my first show, and that wasn't pleasant for anyone, but it happened. And that was about 6 years ago that I did my first show, and which I loved, and then I did my second show and realised that I wasn't actually very good. And we have so much pressure on ourselves in lots of scenarios to be great and to always be good and to always be perfect. There's something so freeing about realising that you're not good at something, and if you just keep working at it, you'll get better, and it's okay. So, and I just kept going and kept continuing and learned skills. And after 4 or 5 more years of that and continuing to get better and realising that actually after a while I did know what I was doing, got through that kind of unconscious, got into conscious kind of mastery almost, I guess. Anyway, and Wade last year invited me to become a bandit as well, which was a fantastic step for me, because I got to play with people that I had been watching from right when I began, and try and make them laugh and try and bring a different dimension and learn from them and challenge them a little bit, I think. Bring a feminist viewpoint to you guys as well.
Is it
right. I say that laughing,
men,
by the way, because
mostly men.
Yeah, it is otherwise primarily men, but I laugh
bandits,
when I say in the bandits. It's not in the covert, it's about half and half, but I laugh when I say it because pretty much all of the guys are actually feminists themselves, even more so than I am. So I say I bring the feminist viewpoint. Mm. I mean, we're all in that together. You know?
We had to tell Tia to tone down the masculinity. It's a little bit scary. Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Do you wear a mask as a bandit?
No need.
No need.
Just the lots of these ones, the natural masks,
a
normal mask. Yeah.
Lara Croft.
We've got over 50 people in the Covert Theatre, so it's a big theatre group.
Yeah, that's great. And then you can go and move on to shake your body and listen to some great music with now Katrina and Kay.
And we're not at Tepec. We have performed there, but this time round we're going back to the Pump House on the shores of Lake Pupuki in Takapuna.
Inside or outside?
Inside gig this time round. Yeah. We do prefer the inside gigs because
the acoustic is better.
Yeah, you can really cocoon yourself in the audio. Yeah, so last time we were there, we sold out nearly, and we've cracked the 100 on ticket sales, so that's great. And it's this Sunday, so a week from today, we would have finished the gig this time next Sunday. So it's the 28th of October, a 6 o'clock start, and I think two times 35 minutes with a good 20 minutes in between to go to the bar. We do think it's very important to have solid drinking time.
Lubrication.
Yes.
Lubrication.
Is that for the audience, for you guys?
No, we're professional. No drinking till after the gig. Yeah, so it's a one-off gig at the Pump House, and I think that's going to be our last one for the year. But we'll return to TAPAC, no doubt, in 2019. I don't think we've got any new songs this time round, but there's a few we've only performed once. So Lorraine Havel's got a beautiful song that she's going to sing.
Doing her very best.
You don't know
Mavis Staples.
Yes. Yeah, Mavis Staples. That's a really beautiful song.
Yeah.
And Jackie's got a new one. Jennifer doesn't have any solos this time round, but it's going to be the full contingent of the choir, minus a couple who couldn't make it. So really looking forward to going back to the Pump House.
This is my first time there, so I'm really looking forward to it.
First time at the Pump House. Well, let's
second
have...
Second time for the choir.
Second time.
Will you do Wannabe, though? Will you do Wannabe?
No, we're going to... I'm going to replay Wannabe for Wait. So next Sunday, if you don't listen... Keycards to go and to listen Jubilation, you're excused, of course, we approve that. But let's have another taste of Jubilation with another song, Testify. So this is what you could be listening next Sunday at 6 p.m. At the Pump House. So we'll be back.
I said I wasn't gonna testify, but I couldn't keep it to myself. What the Lord has done for me. Oh, I said I wasn't gonna jump for joy, but I couldn't keep it to myself. Oh, I couldn't keep it to myself. Oh, I what the Lord has done for me.
You ought to be there.
You ought to be there.
When it's in my soul.
Save my soul.
That Sunday morning.
You ought to be there.
When it's in my name.
I said I wasn't gonna jump for joy, but I couldn't keep it to myself.
What the Lord has done for me.
You ought to be there.
When you see my soul.
Save my soul.
That Sunday morning.
You ought to be there.
When it was my name.
Save my soul.
That's one more.
me. Whoa.
Thank you, Rick.
Sounds great. So if you want to go and see and listen and see more from the Jubilation Choir, it's next Sunday. So how do we get tickets to the Pump House?
You can go to pumphouse.co.nz.
And then just go to their What's On page, and there's lots happening. But
and then just look for Jubilation Choir.
Yeah.
Do you have a Facebook page?
Yes, we do.
Yes.
And a website as well.
And the website, which is jubilation.co.nz?
That's right.
That's right.
And I think there's a few Jubilation Choirs, so we're Jubilation NZ in terms of Facebook.
Yes.
I think that's
right. Or you just do jubilation.co.nz and you land exactly on the right page.
Yeah.
And then you can go and watch some improvisation, like we talked before, and we can go and take a look to the 21st birthday of the Improv Bandit.
Yes.
How do we get the invitation to the...
Well, you have to know CJ and I personally.
It's a good thing we know lots of people.
Yeah. It's tapag.org.nz. Is where you can, that's where you get the tickets from, or just go to improvbanners.co.nz and you can find them there as well.
That's fantastic. Or you can go to see some Shakespeare modernized, made it young. And how do we get tickets there?
So we are also at TAPAC, so you can find tickets for Taming of the Shrew at www.tapac.org.nz, or if you search Broken Quill Theatre on Facebook, you can find us there with links and lots of information and trailers and videos and all sorts on there.
Yeah,
too.
Lots of cool stuff. Yeah.
That sounds amazing and fantastic. Well, sometimes.
I think fantastic is good.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, this was another episode of Key Cards. You know, you can listen to the violins that I usually put in the background when we are closing down.
Oh, is that
what
they are? Yeah. Classic.
I always add my violins. I like this violin. It was really a pleasure to have all you on board tonight. So thank you, Jordan, Queenie, Vate, CJ, Katrina and Kate. And, of course, Paula, thank you for being here. If you want to be a guest here on Key Cards, just email us at keycards1@gmail.com, one the number. Or you can follow us on Facebook, just search for Kick Arts. And you can listen to our archive of 320 episodes on keycards.org.nz. The page is updated on a monthly basis because I cannot do it every week. And of course, if you want to listen to this show, you can go on planetaudio.org.nz just after 5 minutes after the show is ended and download it or listen or stream it. You do whatever you want to do. It stays on the Planet FM page for 4 weeks and then it disappears, but you can catch it up on our website. So this is all for tonight. Next week, Richard Green will be back after his, huge trip around Europe to host another exciting episode of Kick Arts. It's been Annie Benzanelli for tonight. Go out there, kick some arts, and good night.